Good afternoon. I will call to order this remote hearing of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorff to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotiza Witun.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
I'm here.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Elkins. Representative Haley. Representative Kegel.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, present.
Representative Lucero.
Lucero, present, trying to slam my post-lunch caffeine.
Nice. Representative Olson is excused today as well. Representative Farr.
Farr, present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Tice, present.
And Representative Elkins. Representative Haley.
All right, we do have a quorum. Our first item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes from February 22nd, yesterday. Representative Cotiza Witun, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the minutes for February 22nd.
Representative Cotiza Witun moves approval of the minutes from February 22nd, 2022. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes from February 22nd, 2022 are approved. We have four bills on the agenda for today. The first three are all from our colleague, Representative Amy Wasilick, and all relate to PFAS. What we are going to do to make this workable or most efficient, I should say, is I'm going to ask Representative Wasilick to explain all three bills. We will then take public testimony as to all three bills, where the public can testify to one or all three all at once, since these bills are kind of similar in structure. We'll then move each bill individually, have discussion to each bill individually, and vote on each bill individually. So that's the game plan for today. So I will now turn the floor over to Representative Wasilick to explain the three bills that she has brought to the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to present here today. As many of you are aware, PFAS, or per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, are used in a lot of consumer products, often because of their grease and water-resistant properties. They are extremely persistent in the environment and in human bodies. Research has found these chemicals in, well, pretty much everywhere, in breast milk, in blood and urine, in cow's milk, in produce, in fish, in deer, in rainwater, in drinking water, the list goes on and on. Studies have linked certain PFAS to kidney cancer, testicular cancer, hypertension, thyroid disease, low birth weight, and immunotoxicity in children. These chemicals can build up or bioaccumulate in the human body over time. And as I said earlier, they are very persistent and are called forever chemicals because of that. The best way to prevent the negative health and environmental impacts of PFAS because of their nature is to actually prevent the PFAS from being human exposure to PFAS or being part of the environment. And so the best way to do this is really to prevent the chemicals from getting into the environment or being used in products that we come into contact with. So today we have three bills here that are sort of a series of bills that seek to do just that. First up is House File 2906, which bans the use of PFAS in cosmetics. In a recent study, scientists tested more than 200 cosmetics, including concealers, foundations, eye and eyebrow products, and various lip products. According to the study, 56% of foundations and eye products, 48% of lip products, and 47% of mascaras tested were found to contain high levels of fluorine, which is an indicator of PFAS use in a product. I want to quote one of the authors of the study, who's actually a professor of physics at Notre Dame. They said, "These results are particularly concerning when you consider the risk of exposure to the consumer, combined with the size and scale of a multi-billion dollar industry that provides these products to millions of consumers daily. There's the individual risk. These are products that are applied around the eyes and mouth with a potential for absorption through the skin or at the tear duct, as well as possible inhalation or ingestion. PFAS is a persistent chemical. When it gets into the bloodstream, it stays there and accumulates. There's also the additional risk of environmental contamination associated with the manufacture and disposal of these products, which could affect many more people. So this bill is fairly simple in terms of the language that's used. It's a ban on using PFAS in cosmetics, and the definition of cosmetics is in the bill. And I also want to note the enforcement language is the same enforcement language that was used in the food packaging bill that we passed last session. Next up is House File 2907, which prohibits the use of PFAS in cookware. A lot of nonstick cookware, if you have that at home, has a special coating on it. And in a lot of these cases, it is, it's called PTFE, which is polytetrafluoroethylene, also known as the brand name Teflon. This coating is typically made using several different PFAS chemicals, and these coatings can release PFAS into the environment throughout the lifespan of the cookware, especially during the manufacture, but also through high temperature cooking and during disposal or recycling. I had an experience of this where I had an old beat up nonstick pan, and literally the only thing I could do was throw it in the trash. And we know that for a lot of folks, that ends up going to a landfill, and then from there can leach PFAS out from there into water. These coatings are also coming into direct contact with food, which people are eating, which is another potential pathway through which these chemicals could get into the human body. So this is similar language to House File 2906, just with the specific focus on cookware and the definition of cookware in there. Finally, we have House File 2952, which bans PFAS in ski wax. Research conducted in Maine, Sweden, and Norway, places that have lots of snow and lots of skiing, found high levels of various PFAS chemicals in the snow near starting lines or areas where ski events were held. Researchers also found PFAS contamination in the soil, with concentrations higher nearing the starter lines where those PFAS chemical concentrations were also higher. We all know that PFAS is very mobile, and so once it gets into the snow, when the snow melts, it can easily move through the ground and get into the groundwater, and from there can get into drinking water for those folks who use groundwater as a drinking water source. So we have a series of bills here that ban these toxic chemicals so we can really get to the root of the problem. As we've heard from MPCA and others with their PFAS blueprint, the only real way to prevent these chemicals from doing further damage in the environment is to prevent them from getting there in the first place. These forever chemicals are very hard to get rid of, and so once they're there, there's not really a whole lot that we can do beyond dilution. So it's really important that we prevent them from getting into our waste streams and our environment and our bodies, as opposed to treating the problem on the back end.
Great. Thank you, Representative Wasilewicz. We will now move to public testimony. As I mentioned, testifiers can speak to all three bills together or any of the bills in particular. I just ask that you clarify what bills you're speaking to when you speak. The first testifier who signed up today is Deanna White with Clean Water Action Alliance. Ms. White.
Thank you so much. I will be speaking to all three bills today. My name is Deanna White, and I'm the State Director of Clean Water Action. I also serve as the Director of the Healthy Legacy Coalition, a health-based coalition of organizations focused on ensuring that consumer products, especially those for children, are made without the use of toxic chemicals. These two organizations are joining together today to support the three bills before you, House Files 2906, 2907, and 2952. These bills are part of a larger PFAS prevention package that aims to stop the non-essential use of PFAS in a wide array of products. As Representative Wasilewicz so ably explained, PFAS are a class of chemicals that are in need of immediate action based on their threat to consumer health and widespread and costly pollution in our environment. In my written testimony, I link to a number of studies and pieces of scientific background that talk about the specific health concerns. So I'll let you go ahead and check those out. But in the interest of time, I'll skip over the longer explanation of all of the health impacts because I think we're all quite familiar with them. But I will say that PFAS are also known as forever chemicals because they are virtually indestructible and they last a long time in the environment and in our bodies. Eliminating the non-essential use of PFAS was identified as a key opportunity to prevent pollution in the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and other agencies working together on their Minnesota PFAS blueprint. We hope that the committee will agree that preventing costly PFAS pollution should be a top priority for the legislature. Consumers do not want products that contain hazardous chemicals. One example related to ski wax is that when the largest ski wax and snowboard ski and snow associations in the U.S. learned about the hazards of PFAS ski wax, they swiftly banned PFAS wax at their events. Similar action was just recently taken by the organizers of the American Birkenbeiner International Ski Race held over just over the border in Wisconsin. Now skiers cannot compete in the race with PFAS ski wax. And while these actions are commendable, recreational associations and race organizers shouldn't have to be responsible for the safety of products, yet they are having to take action because businesses are not. Buyers for large institutions such as healthcare industry have instituted purchasing policies that prohibit products with hazardous chemicals, including PFAS. For example, in 2019, U.S. hospitals spent $121 million on furniture and furnishings that avoid target chemicals of concern. And here in Minnesota, the state's procurement program prohibits office furniture with PFAS and other hazardous chemicals. Another example is that national retailers such as Walmart and Target have enacted comprehensive policies to address chemicals of concerns in their supply chains. In regard to PFAS, Minnesota-based Target enacted policies that eliminate their use in major product categories. For example, Target has successfully removed PFAS from their Target brand apparel products, and they have a goal to eliminate PFAS from their store brand textiles this year. But businesses and institutions need strong policies in place to make it easier for them to do the right thing. We can't rely on just market forces. The bills before the committee prohibit PFAS in three different product categories: cosmetics, cookware, and ski wax. One commonality all of these products share is that they can be made without PFAS. Cosmetics, we see a growing number of retailers and manufacturers offering cosmetics and personal care products without PFAS. National retailers are changing their store brand products to be PFAS-free, including Sephora, H&M, Whole Foods Market. On cookware, we know that consumers have a variety of PFAS-free cookware options currently on the market. Nonstick cookware options include classic cast iron. Newer nonstick cookware lines from companies such as Always Pan, Green Life, Caraway, and Green Pan. And with ski wax, and as I mentioned before, we've already seen major international and national ski federations and ski races leading the way, but we've also seen that ski wax companies are developing PFAS-free waxes. If you look at the website of the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association, they list 10 companies that currently offer PFAS-free wax. And while this market movement is welcome and appreciated, states across the country are taking action to permanently close the door on non-essential uses of PFAS in products. Policy actions support fair competition. By prohibiting PFAS, businesses that make, distribute, and sell PFAS-free products can fairly compete with businesses who do not factor in the health and environmental impacts of their products. We are asking the state of Minnesota to heed the call of EPA Administrator Michael Regan when he stated, every level of government, from local trust to state to tribal to federal, will need to exercise increased and sustained leadership to truly make progress on PFAS. Minnesota has been a national leader in prohibiting other harmful chemicals, such as formaldehyde and bisphenol A in children's products. These laws have protected generations of Minnesota children, and businesses have successfully adapted by transitioning to safer products. We ask that you continue this leadership and the leadership that you showed last year in passing the ban on PFAS in food packaging by supporting the PFAS prevention package and passing these three bills today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. White. Our next testifier is Lori Olinger from the Sierra Club. Ms. Olinger.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and committee members. My name is Lori Olinger, and I'm with the Sierra Club North Star Chapter. We have 80,000 members in Minnesota, and I'm testifying in support of the three bills to ban PFAS in ski wax, cosmetics, and cookware. The harms from PFAS are well known. The costs of dealing with contamination caused by PFAS pollution are also very high, and taxpayers are footing the bill. Technologies that attempt to destroy PFAS are energy intensive and expensive. The most effective and inexpensive way to deal with PFAS is to stop putting them in so many products. The ski industry has already started moving away from fluorinated ski wax. The International Federation of Skiing, the U.S. Ski and Snowboard, and the Minnesota High School Nordic Ski Coaches are just some of the associations that have banned fluorinated ski wax at events. Swix, one of the leading manufacturers, no longer makes fluorinated waxes. A growing chorus is saying that the extra performance benefit is not worth the health risk and the environmental damage. But without a ban, fluorinated ski wax will continue to be manufactured and used by people unaware of the risk. I was quite stunned to find out how much PFAS is in cosmetics. A recent study found that more than half contained high levels of PFAS. It's used to make foundation feel silky, to make longer-lasting lipstick and waterproof mascara. A recent study also found that in 88% of products with PFAS, the label didn't list it. So even if you are aware of the risks, it's nearly impossible to avoid. And PFAS is an endocrine disrupting chemical that can interfere with our hormones. Pregnant women are particularly vulnerable since their exposure to PFAS can impact three generations at once, the mother, the baby, and future grandchildren. If you asked a woman, do you want a chemical in your cosmetics linked to reproductive problems, thyroid disease, obesity, and vaccine issues, she's likely to say no. Cookware was one of the first uses of PFAS and continues to be a big market. Most nonstick cookware is treated with PTFE, known as Teflon. Labels are often misleading, and even products labeled PFOA-free had Teflon. For some items like small appliances, there are no options other than nonstick. And the American Cancer Society noted a risk from breathing fumes from overheated Teflon-coated pans. I've been looking to replace my Teflon nonstick waffle iron with something that doesn't have nonstick, and there is just no product that I can buy. For all of these products, non-fluorinated options are or could be available. PFAS is a health risk consumers are often unaware and find it difficult to avoid when they are. We're all paying the cost for the downstream issues that PFAS creates. I ask that you support these bills to protect our health and the environment and to reduce the future costs of managing PFAS pollution. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Tony Quillis from the Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, good afternoon, committee members. I hope you can hear me. Always want to check that box. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify on, I'm going to testify also and stay with the theme of efficiency and testify on all 2906, 2907, and 2952. Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that there are over 4,000 chemicals in the PFAS class structure, and not all of them have the same toxicological effects. And the hazard and risk profiles are different for each chemical and each use of these chemicals. They have a wide range of applications with different properties and different characteristics. There's over 6,000 uses of this product. It's used in medical devices, automobiles, manufacturers, airplanes, solar panels, and cell phones are just some of the uses of it. It's known for its resistance, as Representative Wasilek pointed out, to grease, oil, water, and heat, and it provides flexibility, strength, durability, and stability to the products it's used in. It is not a chemical class that can be regulated as a one-size-fits-all. There has been an abundance of activity, Mr. Chairman, at the federal and state level. On the federal level, the EPA has just released their PFAS roadmap. They're going to be reviewing effluent limitation guidelines. They're going to be issuing risk assessments, as well as disposal and guidance documents. Data review has already been done on 20 PFAS applications. And all of this, as Director Reagan has pointed out at EPA, is going to be taking place in 2022, as well as early first quarter of 2023. Here on the state level, the PCA has released their blueprint. Additionally, the PCA is sampling fish tissue in the state of Minnesota. The Department of Administration has amended state contracts on purchasing compostable products that contain PFAS. The PCA has also issued a draft monitoring plan right now with requests out to permitted facilities in the state of Minnesota as to whether or not they have PFAS in their air, water, or hazardous waste facilities. The Department of Commerce has a chemicals and products interagency team that's meeting among state agencies to address this. And also, Mr. Chairman, last year, the legislature created and funded a PFAS stakeholder task force on wastewater, PFAS and wastewater and landfills, of which I serve on, and we've had a number of meetings already. Mr. Chairman, if there are alternatives, and you've heard it today in testimony, the industry is moving towards them. But not all products and all applications have alternatives, and not all of those alternatives have been tested. Not all PFAS chemicals have health risk limits or health-based values limited to them. Also, this isn't an issue that can be solved on the local or state level or on an individual product-by-product ban. This has to be looked at on the federal level, Mr. Chairman. And in regards to the three individual bills, none of those bills contain what I call de minimis language, intentionally added language, or what I call the manufacturer retail lag, where a manufacturer date is stopped and then a retail lag through there, Mr. Chairman. I just want to point out before I sign off that there are letters in your packets also from the Personal Care Products Council, the Alliance for Telometer Chemistry Stewardship, and the Minnesota Retailers also expressing their concerns on these three bills. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time today, and I'll stick around if other questions come up as you move through the process.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Our last testifier is John Keen from the Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers. Mr. Keen.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Stevens, members of the committee. My name is John Keen, the Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers. And we had opposition to House File 2907. AA members produce hundreds of millions of products each year. They design and build products to the highest levels of quality and safety. This legislation was specifically prohibited the sale of cookware products in which PFAS substances are present. One of the issues with this bill is the broad grouping of PFAS, as was mentioned before, which number in the thousands with many endangerment properties. The broad grouping of PFAS is also inappropriate as it ignores other government agencies' chemical-specific work mentioned before. Just last year, EPA issued a proposed rule to require certain entities to report their PFAS uses. So that's already going in place. So just conclude quickly. We urge Minnesota to allow the federal government to lead this initiative, and we urge you to oppose this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. So we've now moved through all of the public testimony on these bills. We will now move to each bill, and we'll have discussion and questions. Before I turn to you, Representative Lucero, I'm just going to quick do the motion for the first bill. The first bill that we'll be looking at is House File 2906. I will move that House File 2906 be recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. And we will speak specifically to this bill now, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my first question will be for the bill of author. But before I get to my question, I'm just going to make a quick comment regarding something that I just heard in the testimony for this bill. But it's something, it's a phrase that I continue to hear in many committees on multiple pieces of legislation that do create a concern for me. And that is, I continue to hear the repetition of XYZ policy proposal shouldn't be regulated at the state level, but instead we need to look for a national solution or something at the federal government. And that I continue to hear this over and over and over again, and it really is a concern for me because our republic is 50 individual states, and we have the authority, as our system was set up, to regulate stuff within the states. I don't want some national government to come in and continue to mandate and make the decisions for us, some national far distant Congress. So again, I have concerns with these bills, but it's not for that reason, it's for other reasons. But we don't want to continue to gauge down this path of usurping, ceding our authority as a legislative branch and sovereign state, the government. I'm sorry for that diversion, Mr. Chair, so thank you for that. But the question that I have for the bill author is, I've heard it with one of the testifiers here and in my research prior to this committee hearing, I see the term non-essential. So, Mr. Chair and to the bill author, how do we determine non-essential, or how did you determine these three specific bills in terms of ski wax, cookware, and consumer-grade cosmetics versus the universe of products out there? And again, how are you making the distinction between essential and non-essential?
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, Representative Lucero, I agree that the state should be able to regulate these things. That's why I have these bills here today. But in terms of your question about essential and non-essential, That language is not in the bill, so I'm not sure where your question is coming from. I mean, I can say, if you want me to say what those definitions mean, I can sort of talk about them, but that language is not in the bill.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you're right, that language isn't in the bill, but one of the testifiers in favor of the bills used the language non-essential. And then in my research, I also am seeing the reoccurrence of the use non-essential in relationship to the PFAS and the uses thereof. And so in your bills, in the universe of PFAS usage, you made the determination to ski wax, cookingware, and cosmetic products, which I presume are categorized by the supporters of the bills as non-essential PFAS usage. So what I'm wondering is, how did you make the decision for these products, and why not just an all-out ban completely?
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I actually wanted to do an all-out ban, as Maine did, on all non-essential uses of PFAS, but we actually went this route because we figured it would be easier to get these few things done. So the difference between non-essential and essential, that really didn't play into this conversation. The reason that I'm presenting these bills is because they're very, the PFAS that's used in these products is very, it's very close to people, right? So cookware, it's touching the food that you're cooking. Cosmetics, it's literally touching your face or your body. And then the ski wax is in the environment. So this was more an attempt to tackle three of the places where we know that PFAS exists, that we know that there are alternatives. As you've heard from some of the testifiers, there are alternatives to all of these uses of PFAS in these products. And so that was more of what we were aiming for, is can we do this in a way that we think we can actually get support to get this done, as opposed to an all-out ban, which, to be frank, doesn't have a chance.
Representative Lucero, any follow-up?
Yep, just one more follow-up. And then thank you for that, Representative Wasserwood. Then also in my research, I'm seeing that there are concerns with this in regards to solar panels and the runoff of the PFAS usage, the runoff into groundwater, et cetera. Would you be amenable to an amendment, obviously not today, but in the potential future, for a prohibition, or to add prohibiting PFAS in the use of the solar panels in Minnesota?
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lucero, for the question. I don't think that's the place in either any of these bills, because they're very specific about very specific products. And my goal is to move forward with these bills individually, because I think there's an opportunity for us to gain the support we need to get them done. And I have had conversations with folks around these topics, and I think there is a possibility of moving these forward. I think, Representative Lucero, if you have concerns about PFAS and solar panels, I'm sure that people would welcome you drafting a bill and introducing it to address that problem. But I don't see that as being a thing that we're going to tackle with these three individual bills this session.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have concerns about solar panels, but it's more in the areas of child labor and things like that. But that's a different conversation, different day. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, I am going to follow the lead of people who started with the conversation. We were talking about all three bills. The comments that I have are going to be repetitious. I'm just going to make them once here on the first bill before we vote for them. They clearly are going to be important for all the bills, because there's a general flaws in the whether the bills are written, in my perspective on here. So in respect for the committee and for time, I want to just be able to ask a series of questions once, and then we can move on to the other bills, because this will stand. A question for the bill author. Mr. Chair and Representative Wasilek, July 1st of 2024, what's magical about that particular date, a little more than 24 months from where we are today?
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. There is nothing magical about that date. It was just the date that was put in when we drafted the bill, and it was similar to the language, I believe, the time gap between the food packaging bill when we introduced that and the effective date of that. And that did, in the food packaging bill, that did get pushed back after hearing from some folks who had concerns about that. So that's a point that we're flexible on. We want to get this going as soon as we can, but we also know that it's going to take some work to get products off shelves and that sort of thing. So no magic about the date. That was just what was in there.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wazza, to follow up on that, today you didn't bring in an amendment to modify that date. Do you have a date in mind that you were looking at, wanting to change that to? That might be a realistic and workable option in your bill.
Representative Wazowick, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if I remember correctly with food packaging, I think we might have put it out another year, but it might have been a year and a half. But I will, that's a conversation that I'm going to have, I think, with each specific bill, because I know there were concerns. Concerns specifically, I think, from the cosmetics folks on that piece. I think someone testified in Environment Committee, or maybe it was in the written testimony, that said that some of these products are coming from other countries, and so what are we going to do about that issue? Still working on that piece. Certainly there's an opportunity for us to move that back, because we know it's going to be hard to meet. And we've seen that be the case in other things that we've done. So open to that conversation. I think it's just going to be a different conversation with the stakeholders around each of these bills.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wazowick, another follow-up. I see that the information I have that there's a fiscal impact on here. Do you know where the funding for this fiscal impact is going to come from? Says I'm not sure that anyone has any budget targets for the second half of the biennium right now. And so I getting the impression from the chair that we're going to vote these out, and there's a financial consequence to it, but we don't have a budget target to tie your expenses for enforcement back on this.
Representative Wazowick, do we have, to Representative O'Driscoll's point, do we have a fiscal note that has a cost for the Department of Commerce or?
There are fiscal notes for all three of the bills.
I'm just going to interject and say that I'm being told by our staff that the costs aren't assigned to the Department of Commerce, which makes sense. I imagine they're for the PCA or some other entity. So we're reviewing this bill on a policy basis today, Representative O'Driscoll. I'm sorry if I didn't mean to interject on your question. I just wanted to clarify that we're reviewing a policy question. And Representative Wazowick, I don't know if you want to respond to the rest of Representative O'Driscoll's question.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think if I remember correctly, I don't have the fiscal notes. I have like 10 tabs up, but not the fiscal note. But if I remember correctly, there was some interplay between MPC and health. Because health would be part of the testing and the that sort of process. So I think the funding piece would be mostly with MPCA, and then there might be a little bit of back and forth, some transfer of funds to the Department of Health. I believe that was what we did with food packaging, and I think it would be sort of similar in these bills.
Representative Bristol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the fiscal impact question, I don't know that it was necessarily correct. This is a Commerce Committee. We're also a Finance Committee and a Policy Committee. But the reason for asking that was just to see if maybe something had happened, that there were some targets that were out there that I wasn't aware of, because this bill might be just a little ahead of itself. To use a term during the Olympics, we might be over the tip of our skis a bit here on bringing this bill forward, since we don't have any funds to cover this. Representative Wazowick, in my district, as I go through national retailers and local retailers and things, I'm seeing product shortages. And given the fact that we're looking at trying to do this in, like I say, a little over 24 months, do you believe that the industry, with the supply chain shortage, with the import problems that we've got right now in our Los Angeles ports and other places, that we'll have product replacement available to meet the demand that's necessary in the marketplace right now?
Before I turn over to Blas, let me just say that no targets yet for this committee or any other, but we really, as much as I would love the Commerce Committee to have financial jurisdiction over other areas, I suspect that Chair Dabney and others on this committee might object a little bit if we were reviewing the finances of other committee areas. So we do have both finance and policy, and this we're reviewing on a policy basis. Representative Wazowick to Representative O'Driscoll's question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for the question. We do have quite a large surplus, so I imagine that there will be some legislation passed this session that includes funding, and these bills could be part of that. It's not for sure. We don't know what exactly is going to happen in the next few weeks, but these could certainly be part of the conversation. To your question about products, I personally have not noticed, and others can speak to this, and I don't know if it's different in your district, Representative O'Driscoll, but I haven't noticed product shortages. I'm not a skier, so I can't speak to, I liked your reference talking about a ski wax bill. I don't ski, but I don't think there's a shortage of ski wax. I think at some point someone would have, it would be a news item in Minnesota if there was a shortage of Stewax. And as somebody who occasionally peruses the cosmetics aisle, I don't think there's a shortage of cosmetics there either. But I think one of the concerns with cosmetics is we don't know that there's PFAS in these cosmetics because they're not required to label. So I would say, and I would say the same for cookware. There's a lot of misinformation out there and a lot of things labeled, you know, PFOA free, but that only is one type of PFAS. So I would say, unless I looked and noted that and knew what was in these products, which we don't require disclosure of PFAS right now, it would be hard for me to speak to whether or not there's enough products on the shelves to be able to do this. What I do know is that there are companies that have already moved this way and that already have products out there available for consumers to buy. Whether they're available in the specific store down the street from the Representative Driscoll, I don't know, but they are pretty widely available for consumers to purchase.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair, here is the other part of why I ask about the supply chain. I haven't noticed a ski wax issue. I was just using that as a metaphor to place where we are in the timing of the bill with the Olympics. I don't purchase cosmetics, but I do purchase a lot of other things in grocery and retail. And I know that they're, in my district anyhow, the people are feeling the shortages, the supply chain issues, and the inability of product to get from the ships to the retailers and those kinds of things. Unfortunately, your district maybe doesn't have those issues, and that's great, but it's not maybe like it is in your district everywhere else. There are shortages. And with a vast number of products that are covered by this, we could be forcing additional shortages without replacement products into the marketplace. And so I think that's something that we need to look at as consideration. Two other categories of questions very quickly, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your indulgence. Like I said, I'm just going to ask all of them. They are pertinent to all three sets of the questions for the bills here. And so I appreciate the time to be able to have this. If things were purchased on the internet, since that is an interstate commerce purchase, and you're banning this in the state of Minnesota, which is only where we have jurisdiction, how are you going to force compliance with your regulation if someone purchases it either A, through the internet, and B, if someone were to go over to, say, North Dakota to a Target store in Fargo and do business there and bypass the Minnesota Target store at Moorhead to bring those products to their home?
Representative Wazlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for the question. That would be a good question for MPCA since they're the folks that do the enforcement. I don't think there's anybody here today from the agency, but that would be, I can certainly follow up on that question because they have had this in other product bans that they've banned, BPA, for example. So I will follow up on that and get back to you once I have a little more information about how they've dealt with that issue. I would say, you know, the MPCA isn't going to charge into people's homes and take their PFAS-laden cookware from their homes, so that's not a concern. But I do think that that is a very good question and something I will follow up on and let you know what I hear back from the agency.
Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, and my final area of question is this. If retailers, my local hardware store or my local store, mom and pop shop, right on up to the multi-internationals that would have these products that are still in their possession on July 1st of 2024, how are they going to be able to dispose of these in a way that's going to be environmentally acceptable to Representative Wazlik and others? And are we, do we have a system in place that can take such a large volume within the state of Minnesota without creating other shortages and labor-related issues that we're continually seeing here in the marketplace to be able to deal with and properly dispose of in accordance with the way she feels that these things should be handled?
Representative Wazlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. I would say I think I just had a thought in my head and it went away. Hold on a second. So that's another sort of conversation to be had with MPCA, but I do think that one of the goals of the legislation is that we pass a bill that has an implementation date that's far down the line, and the hope is that those products will be sold, right? And so it's not, the deadline is further out in the future. And so part of that is going to be over the course of however many years until the implementation date, some of those products will be sold. In terms of what we're going to do with disposal, that is another good question that I can certainly follow up on. I think that's a piece that we're trying to avoid, right? We don't want all these chemicals going into the landfill and the environment. So figuring out how we do that is important. We do have models for how that's been done with e-waste and paint and several other sort of categories of chemicals and products that we have decided are toxic and we don't want them in the environment. So there is a model for that out there. I think it's just a matter of having those conversations and figuring out where those things go. There are other PFAS bills in the works on different sorts of products, and so I think that's a good conversation piece for all of us to know so that we don't just have a dump full of PFAS products. So thanks for bringing up the question.
Thank you for the time, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wasilek. My final summation comment would be maybe a good idea to look at it, but right now we are far afield from being able to have a workable bill that's going to most likely be voted out of this committee today without even an amendment to align with what we had done last year on this with the disposal and not even an updated maybe how we're doing with the previous discussions on this as well. So Representative Wasilek, thank you for your time today and your answering of questions. And thank you again, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Representative Katiza Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Wasilek, for bringing these forward. I think that this is such an important conversation to be having and to see and to hear how impactful PFAS has become in our day-to-day lives, and just the fact that it's being found in breast milk, in soil, in water, everywhere. I think that we should all be very concerned about it and take this really seriously. I did want to clarify a little bit to Representative O'Driscoll's point about products being on the shelves and then past the current implementation date. It sounds like last year when we were talking about the food packaging, we were able to, have conversations with the retailers and manufacturers and really kind of find a date that's going to work better for that. And so I'm assuming that those conversations are ongoing as we move forward with these particular manufacturers and retailers as well, so that that's not going to be, a big hang up down the line.
Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so that will be part of the conversation. These bills all have another committee stop that they're going to, so that'll be part of the conversation as we move up to that next committee. And then from there, there's certainly still opportunity. Some of the changes we made in the food packaging legislation actually happened in conference committee. So there's still an opportunity for conversation even beyond our last committee stop if these bills advance.
Representative Katiza Watum.
Thank you for all your work on this.
Representative Lissegard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I am, I want it on record that I obviously PFAS is an extremely dangerous material that needs to be addressed, but I do have concerns raised by Representative O'Driscoll about not the consumers, but the individuals and the companies that have purchased this, and then they get stuck with it, then they have to they bought it, they can't sell it, it's not sold in time, and then they have to dispose of it. And that's a cost, put onto them. And so while this is extremely important and we need to address it before it moves on to the floor, I think that issue needs to be addressed to get more broad support, that we're taking care of everyone involved, because we all want to take care of this problem. And but to leave it on the business owners and the small businesses, I guess I'm uncomfortable with that. But it is, I thank you for bringing this forward. Everybody that I talk to realizes and acknowledges this issue is extremely important and we have to address it. But I do think that this still has a lot of work for prime time, but this is the first stop.
Thank you, Representative Lissegard. I see no other members seeking recognition. Representative Wasilek, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for the lively discussion and the good questions. And I'll certainly follow up with information that I get from the sources I need to get it from. What I really want to say, though, is just the importance of this legislation. We've heard industry say that the costs of passing this legislation are too high, but we all know who foots the bill, right? It's the Minnesotans whose drinking water is poisoned by these chemicals. It's the cities that have to build new wastewater infrastructure because their groundwater is contaminated by these chemicals. It's the consumers who may unknowingly expose their kids to these chemicals. And it's taxpayers in Minnesota who have to pay to clean up these chemicals. And that's that. I think those costs are too high, and I'm hopeful that members will support these bills so we can move them forward and continue the discussion and get PFAS, prevent the PFAS from getting there in the first place, so we can start working on the issue. Thank you.
All right. With that, I will renew my motion. I just got the bill number in front of me again. 2906 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, and I'll ask Mr. Dockendorf to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
No.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, yes.
Carlson, aye. Representative Davney.
Davney, aye.
Davney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Kegel.
Kegel, aye.
Kegel, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson is excused. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Richardson, aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Tice.
Tice, no.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2906 is recommended, to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The next bill is House File 2907. I will move that House File 2907 be recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Wasowick, could you just briefly remind us what which one of the three bills we're looking at now?
Yep, we are on the bill that would ban PFAS in cookware.
In cookware. Any discussion to this bill in particular? Seeing no further discussion, any last words, Representative Wasowick?
No, just want to reiterate the importance of preventing, right? So we know that PFAS exists all over the state, and we want to prevent more PFAS from getting into the environment and from in human bodies, and this is another piece of the puzzle and how we would do that. Thank you.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 2907 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, and Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Davney.
Davney, aye.
Davney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Kegel.
Kegel, aye.
Kegel, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Richardson, aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, no.
Tice, no.
There being 11 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2907 is recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The last of the three bills we'll take up is House File 2952. I will make a motion to refer House File 2952 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Wasowick, could you briefly remind us what bill we are now discussing?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the ban on PFAS and ski wax.
Thank you, Representative Wasowick. Any discussion to this specific bill? Seeing none, Representative Wasowick, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present all these bills today. I do just want to point out that a lot of folks said this isn't a big deal and we need to do something about it, and then don't seem to want to advance the conversation by moving the bill forward. So I hope that folks will support this one. It's ski wax. It's something that lots of people use in the state. I hope we can move it forward and continue the discussion and make changes and make it better and make it pass. Thank you.
All right. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2952 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorf to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotizza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotizza-Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
Barr, no.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, yes.
Carlson, aye. Representative Daphne.
Daphne, aye.
Daphne, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson is excused again. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Richardson, aye.
Okay. Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, no.
With 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2952 is recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Wasilik. Good luck down the road.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Last bill on our agenda is my own, so I will hand the virtual gavel over to by our esteemed Vice Chair, Representative Cotizza-Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3254. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Thank you, Chair Cotizza-Watoon. I will move House File 3254 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee.
Chair Stevenson moves that House File 3254 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Chair Stevenson, to your bill.
Thank you. This bill, members, is a fairly straightforward and short bill. It relates to sales representative agreements and builds upon language that has been passed with broad support in prior sessions. Essentially, what happened several years ago was we passed a law unanimously, as I understand it, that prohibited sales agreements to include a clause applying the law of some other state to a sales contract, sales representative agreement for a sales representative here in Minnesota. We're coming back this year to specifically ban a clause related to venue. So this would be a clause in a contract that says that if there is a dispute, we're going to agree that the court that handles it will be a court in New York or California or Florida. And obviously, that's problematic for several reasons. We have Minnesota citizens here who would be bound to go to California or New York or Florida to vindicate their rights in court. We don't like that. They should be able to stay close here at home in Minnesota to deal with their issues. But perhaps even more troubling, if the law already requires that Minnesota law govern these contracts, I'm not sure why we'd want a court in Florida or New York or California or anywhere else applying Minnesota law and interpreting Minnesota law. We should want Minnesota courts. This is important for small business people who are sales reps. I know of what I speak. My dad was a sales rep for his entire career until he retired a couple of years ago. And while we never had to take a family vacation to some other state to settle a sales dispute in court, I just know that it would have been a big burden to my parents' small business had they been forced to do so. So pleased to offer this bill. I believe I have one testifier.
Good. So to the testifiers, we have Jean Huff. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thank you. Well, thank you. And thank you, Chairman, for taking the time and members of the committee. My name is Gene Hoff. I represent the Manufacturers Agents National Association. To be brief, I think Chair Stevenson hit it right on the head. I mean, that's what we are trying to do. This is protecting Minnesota businesses, small businesses, which are usually 1 to 5 people. And it's really to make sure they get paid commissions We passed a law in 2014 that protected them. What some very clever attorneys are doing now is saying, okay, well, you have to have it heard in another state. Economically, it doesn't help a Minnesota small business. So that's why we're here. And I'm glad to take questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hoff. We have no other testifiers on the list. So members, we will move to discussion. Do we have any questions for either the testifier or Chair Stevenson on this bill? Okay, seeing none, Chair Stevenson, any closing comments?
The predecessor to this bill passed unanimously. I'm hoping this one will too, so I'd ask for your vote. And I'll renew my motion that House File 3254 be recommended be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee.
Right. Hearing no further discussion, Chair Stevenson renews his motion that House File 3254 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And the clerk will now take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Acting Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Between aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Kegel.
Kegel, aye.
Kegel, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Aye.
Lislegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson is excused. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Richardson, aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and House File 3254 is recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And seeing no further business, today's meeting is adjourned.